ब्रह्मानन्दं परमसुखदं केवलं ज्ञानमूर्तिं द्वन्द्वातीतं गगनसदृशं तत्त्वमस्यादिलक्ष्यम् एकं नित्यं विमलमचलं सर्वधि साक्षिभूतं भावातीतं त्रिगुणरहितं सद्गुरुं तं नमामि. ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै. ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः. हरिः ॐ. ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं. हरि ओम् एवरीबडी. इफ एवरीबडी कुड टर्न द वीडियोस ऑन प्लीज, नॉट ऑडियो बट वीडियो, सो आई कैन सी एवरीबडी. वी आर स्टार्टिंग अ न्यू टेक्स्ट and I kind of need to know how many. I know some of you know Swami Tejomanandji quite well, but so if those who don't know him, can you raise your hands? Usha Kapoor, okay, one. Sudha, is that Sudha? Sudha, I can't see your face. Who is Rajan? Oh, the Isuda's there, yeah. I still can't see. Okay. So you don't know. I need to know who doesn't know Swami Tejomanandji very well. Sati, are you there? Kanchan, are you there?
Mujhe mute nahi unse baat karni hai.
No. Don't know very well.
Okay, good. You can mute yourself and Kanchan and leave your audio on and Kanchan.
Okay.
Yes. The reason that I ask, Rashmi, I don't see you. I just see your window.
Yes, Jayaji, something wrong with my picture today.
No, I don't see you also. I should see you. No, forget the picture.
Yeah. But now can you hear me?
I can hear you and I can see your hair.
Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah.
The reason I ask that is the text that we are starting today is what is known as a Prakaran Grantha in our scriptures. Prakaran Grantha in English is a book of definitions. And a book of definitions, we have done, I mean, most of you have studied with me Atmabodh, Tattvabodh, Vivek Chunamani, Drigdrish Vivek. All those are Prakaran Granthas. They are book of definitions. In a book of definitions, there is no new idea that will be presented. Okay. So if there is no new idea, what is the purpose of a book of definition? What is the purpose of a Prakaran Grantha is to simplify the ideas from the scriptures. And the scriptures include the Upanishads, which have a very mystic language, and some Bhagavad Gita as well, because even Bhagavad Gita sometimes is not that easy to understand correctly. It could be misunderstood. And because of that, the compassionate masters decided to write these Prakaran Granthas in very, very simple words, simple terms, so that that's why Prakaran Granthas are taught first. The first text that we teach is Tattvabodh, which is a basic Prakaran Grantha. So it gives us an idea of what is in the scriptures in a very simple way. And when we are well-versed in the Prakaran Granthas, Then when we go on to Bhagavad Gita, Upanishad, those ideas become easier. And it becomes easier for us to refer. See, in Tattva Bodh it said this, it's from here. So that's the first thing. And because Prakaran Granthas are written by authors, it becomes very important that we also know the author a little bit. It's very, very simply put, if I were to give you a recipe, and if Sanjeev Kapoor were to give you a recipe, whose recipe would you take? Who's mine to never? So it's important who is giving those ideas out. Though there is nothing new in the ideas, but is it being correctly presented? So that depends on the author. Like if we know the author and we know his qualifications or her qualifications, then we know that whatever ideas have been presented in the book, no matter they may not be new, they are correct. Idea is they have to be correctly presented. New, old doesn't matter. And that is the reason we have to have a little bit of idea into the author. In this case, it is Swami Tejomayananji. Swami Tejomayananji, he actually did his course way, way, way back in the 80s under Swami Dayanand Saraswati, who is no longer now there. And Swami Tejomayananji was the head, spiritual head of the mission. He was appointed as the spiritual head of the mission after Pooja Gurudev passed in 1993. Swami Tejomayananji is an erudite scholar in Sanskrit. So not only that he does not know the language, like he knows the language very well, just because someone knows the language, he also composes verses, as you can see from here. He has composed verses like this. He has composed bhajans. He's also music. You know, he calls himself a Kansen, not a Tansen. He says, I've heard and studied music based on that. So not that he has got any formal training in music, but just from listening. So he always says, I am not a Tansen, but I'm a Kansen, Kan, you know, hearing. So he has not only written bhajans, but also done the tunes for them. He's an excellent singer. He plays the harmonium really well. And besides all this, I mean, that's okay. He is extremely well-versed in the scriptures, beyond any doubt. His style of explanation is extremely simple. He does not use high flowing language and very high words, which you think, oh, what does that word mean? You would never find a word in his speech where you would wonder, what does that mean? What did he say? Extremely, because in his head, the knowledge is so clear, it is so crystal clear to him that when he presents it also, it is extremely clear. And not only that, with him, whether he's doing a bhakti text or an Upanishad is the highest language, could be Mundaka, could be Mandukya, the clarity in his speech, and even bhakti, extremely devoted, very, very, so there's a, because you know, there are masters who are very good in Upanishads in the knowledge part, but then in bhakti, they may not be, that much of devotion they will not have. That's why when we see, if those of you who have heard Swami Tejomayananji speak, actually, lots of times he will have tears in his eyes, a lot of times. Because while explaining, the guru or something about the Lord, he's a great devotee also, but he has great knowledge as well. So both jnana and bhakti. And then when he was the head of the mission, a lot of karma yoga he has done as well. So he's a bhakta, he's a karma yogi, and he's a jnani. All three rolled into one. Very good administrator, excellent administration, in spite of all his health issues and whatever. So couple of years ago, 1993, Gurudev passed, and that time he was made the head. And just, I think, a couple of years ago, he handed over the charge to, administrative charge to Swami Swarupananji, who is now the global head, spiritual head of Chinmay Mission worldwide. And Swamiji was just basically touring in India. He doesn't come out of India anymore. And he will be teaching the next Brahmachari course in Bombay, which will be starting, hopefully, fingers crossed, in October. So he's a teacher par excellence, like nobody can really, you know, hold his hand. So that, having said that, so you know that whatever he has written in this text, extremely authentic, extremely simple, very easy to follow, especially in the light of the fact that we have just done chapter 12. This is going to be pretty simple to understand. It may be difficult for me to explain, but I think it'll be easy for you to understand. In 1993, Swamiji was posted in San Jose, in the ashram. He was there, and he reflected, and he came up with four books, out of which I think we have studied with Calgary. I'm not sure which ones I have done. The four books together are known as Sadhana Sopan. Sopan is a ladder and Sadhana is self-effort. So it is the ladder of self-effort. And the first book in that is called Manashodhanam. Shodhanam, purification. So purification of the mind. Second one is Jnanasara, a sense of knowledge. Third one is Dhyana Swarupam, the nature of meditation. And the fourth and the last book is this Bhakti Sudha, which means nectar of devotion. That is the ladder of that a seeker must follow. So the first thing that he needs to do is purify his mind. And we see that in Bhagavad Gita as well. It's taken, the idea is from Bhagavad Gita. I told you there will be no new idea in this book. It's not like suddenly he came up with this idea of purification. No, that is what Bhagwan told Arjun as well. And that's why karma yoga was prescribed, because no man can live without karma. So the way to purify the mind is to convert karma into karma yoga. And in Manashodhanam, he talked about the mind. He talked about what the impurities are. If we know what the impurities are, we will try and improve them. If purify them. If I don't even know that this is an impurity, most people, you know, they get angry and they think, oh, I need that anger to get work done. So if I don't even know that it's an impurity, I'm not even going to try to purify. So Manashodhanam told us about the impurities in the mind and how to purify them. Because just telling us that these are the impurities and then not giving us a way to improve them, to purify them, then what is the point? What do I do? I have these impurities now. What do I do with them? So they need to be purified. When the mind is purified, to the extent that the mind is purified, the knowledge will be understood clearly in that mind. That is the purpose of a purified mind. Just like when you put food in a vessel which is dirty, the food is going to get contaminated. Pure food you put, but the vessel is dirty, food is going to get contaminated. Same way, mind is dirty, knowledge is correct knowledge. If that knowledge is put into a dirty mind, the knowledge gets contaminated. In the sense, it will be either misunderstood or not understood at all. And that depends on the tendency of the mind. If the mind is too tamasic, it will not be understood at all. It will be taken as something totally different. And if it is very rajasic, then it will be misunderstood. So that is the danger. If the mind is sattvic, then the understanding will be correct. And when that understanding is correct, it will be easy for us to stay in that knowledge. So after purification of the mind is gaining of knowledge, and after gaining of knowledge, he talks about what meditation is. Okay, so on that knowledge, meditation is to be done, nididhyasanam, and then when that meditation is done on that knowledge, the result is the nectar of devotion. Is, you know, nectar is very sweet. Bhakti is very sweet. Bhakti is not dry. Bhakti is, you know, it has that moisture. What is, you know, it brings tears to your eyes and your heart melts and, you know, all those kinds of things. So that is the final result. Bhakti Sudha, the nectar of devotion, is the final result of this ladder, you know, Sadhana Sopan. So these are the four books that Guruji wrote, and they were blessed by Gurudev. Puja Gurudev was there at that time. So afterwards he started explaining. First they had come up with just the verses and the meanings. I even had that book. That's when I heard it first time. So then the commentaries came out and each book is separate and different and everything. So we should know, and currently, like I said, he is he's in Bombay. And right now, I don't know if anybody knows, but he's doing talks. He'll be finishing tomorrow, tonight rather, or tomorrow, the talks on Kathopanishad he has done on YouTube, because there's a lockdown in India. So with that introduction of Swami Tejomananji, of the author, we will go into this text. Bhakti, devotion. Sudha, nectar, nectar of devotion. Devotion is of the nature of love, but love necessarily does not mean devotion, because I can love chocolates and I can love movies, I can love clothes, parties. That doesn't become devotion. All devotion is of the nature of love, but not all love is of the nature of devotion. So the difference between devotion and love is, devotion has a certain amount of respect, reverence in it. So when there is love for a higher ideal, and higher ideal can be anything. For our freedom fighters, it was the country. That was a higher ideal. God, Guru. In case where there are small children, even that becomes a higher altar, is that children are small and I need to look after them. So devotion is always for something higher. And for that higher, you also have to have respect. So that respect at the level of the mind, at the level of the intellect, and love at the level of the heart, when they confluence, when they come together, it becomes devotion. And since God is the highest, love for God, reverence for God, so that devotion becomes the highest for God. And then, of course, devotion for the Guru who is telling us about God. That's why Guru also becomes very important, the spiritual Guru. We also can have a lot of love for our teachers from school, you know, because of them we have progressed in life, etc. Material gains we have had. But the difference between a teacher in a school or a college or university is that, yes, he teaches us subjects, and yes, because of which we do get higher posts, we can reach higher and higher posts, we can make a lot of money also. But the main difference is that no matter how much money we get and how much high a post we gain, it may not take away our sorrow. That is the difference. So a spiritual guru is one who can take away our sorrow forever. Spiritual guru cannot promise you money, higher post, all those material things he will not promise you, because they are of not much use when it comes to removing sorrow. But definitely he will give you the mindset to deal with all those situations in the world. If you know how to handle your relationship with the world, then there will be no cause for sorrow, which a material teacher cannot do that. He's not trained to do that, and he cannot. Okay, so that's why it is important. That's why spiritual training, they always say, requires a guru. Shravanam is very important. Shravanam presupposes a speaker. So we need to hear, then only we'll come to know. Then we need to do mananam, dhyanam, which is finished, and now is the final result. So with that introduction, one thing about Swami Tejomanandji also is that if you see in this book on page one, he has given a doha, a verse from Ramcharitmanas of Tulsidasji. And the reason for that, that is not a part of the book. One more thing about Prakaran Grantha that I should tell you is that the author of a Prakaran Grantha, a book of definitions, has the right to bodily lift verses from the scriptures, full verses. So from Bhagavad Gita or from Upanishad, he can bodily lift the verse and take it. That is not called as plagiarism. No? That is not called steal. Oh, he stole from Mundaka Upanishad or he stole from Bhagavad Gita. It is not like that. He has the right to bodily lift verses as well as the right to take partial verses. So he might take one quarter of the verse and put it in his Prakaran Grantha, and that is absolutely normal, legal, allowed. If we read Swami Vidyaranyaji's Panchadashi and all, bodily he has lifted verses from Upanishad, from Bhagavad Gita, and he says, this is Bhagavad Gita, this is what Bhagwan says, and this is what Upanishad says, etc. And he's allowed. So that whatever the point he's trying to explain, he explains, and then he says, this is the confirmation in Upanishad. This is the confirmation in Bhagavad Gita. That way. So they are allowed. Okay. Now here, Guruji, Puja Guruji has started with this doha from verse from Tulsi Ramayan. And the reason for that is when one little secret is that his family also is a Ram Bhakta. Where he grew up, his family in Bhopal. They were devotees of Sri Ram, and so was he. So when he began his, spiritual journey, he always had Ram as his Ishta Devata. And then by his own admission, he said, as I went along and I studied Bhagavad Puran, and he did, Bhagavad Sapta, he was doing for quite a while. He still does them probably. So the Bhagavad Sapta that he did, he became a Krishna fan. Then he studied Shiva Puran. Then he became a Shivji fan. So now he's not just a Ram Bhakta. He says, I'm Bhakta of everybody now. But at that time when he wrote this, he was still a Ram Bhakta. And because of that, he has taken this doha from Ramcharitmanas. Tulsi Ramayan was the text that he did first. See, Gurudev was a jnani. Puja Gurudev was a jnani. So Gurudev only did Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads. Gurudev did not do any bhakti text. It was Swami Tejomayanandji, original, he brought bhakti literature into the mission. And the mission is knowledge-based. It is knowledge-based. But Guruji brought this thing. And through Ramayan, through Tulsi Ramayan, he introduced all these bhakti texts into the mission. And then now there are many other Swamijis who are doing it. But originally, he was the one. And when Gurudev was actually not well and he was in Sedabari, he was asked to take rest. So he was resting there. He actually, I think it was Bhagavad Sapta or Tulsi Ramayan, one of the two that Guruji had done. He actually said, I want to see what Tejomayanandji has done. So, Tejomayanand has done. So, he sat and he saw the whole video. And of course, there are devotees who immediately was, Swamiji, Gurudev is watching your video. So, imagine how the disciple would feel that, oh my God, my guru is watching what I am speaking, So, he was very, very, Gurudev was very fond of Swami Tejomayanandji, and Swamiji used to, because he had such a nice voice, he would always ask him to do this Shri Krishna Govinda Hare Murari. He will just tell him, chant, because Guruji used to, accompany him everywhere, right? So, that's what bhakti does to you. Brings tears to your eyes. Anyway, so the first one, like I said, is it's not a part of the text. वर्षा ऋतु रघुपति भगति तुलसी साली सुदास राम नाम बर बरन दो सावन भादो मास. So he says devotion for Sri Rama is the rainy season and the devotees are the crops. So what rains will do to the crops, Sri Rama's name will do to the devotees. So the crops grow, they flourish. They need the rain, right? Without rain, crops can't grow. So the devotee flourishes, grows in love, grows into, you know, so much love that I told you, the Ishta Devata themselves will grant liberation without the devotee asking. Devotee never asks for anything. He says, I just want to love you. I do not want, I have no ulterior motives. I have nothing. I'm just going to love you. And the Lord, out of compassion, finally grants. So he has taken this. Ra and Ma are the two main months, Shravan and Bhadrapada, of the rainy season. So it is just, it shows his devotion to Sri Rama at that time. Okay. And so that's why also we see the first verse, and I've always told you in the Prakaran Grantha, usually the first verse will be a salutation to God or Guru. Because it is written, the salutation is written so that the author, you know, remains humble. He doesn't get the arrogance that I am the one that is writing it. So the surrender comes first. He surrenders first to God or Guru, and then writes, and then the entire credit he will give it to God or Guru, so that his ego remains under check. See, he himself, he cannot, a spiritual seeker cannot afford to have a fat ego, because then that is going against all spiritual seeking. So that is the purpose of this first verse, salutation, invocation, prayer. Namaste Ramachandraya Surude Sarva Dehinam Anugrahan Nishva Nishpat Prabhu. Salutations to Lord Sri Ramchandra, the friend of all beings. Please bless me, O Lord, for getting the nectar of devotion. So very, very simple. He is prostrating to Sri Ram. And I told you at that time, it was Sri Ram was his Ishta Devata. And so he prostrates and he says, Ram Surada, he's a well-wisher of Sarva Dehinam, means all the people. He is the well-wisher. And so I ask for the nectar of devotion. Usually people will ask for, you know, give me this, give me that, job, money, bonus, daughter getting married, son, you know, graduating, this, that, and all that, all these material things that we ask for. But a devotee will always ask, he says, just give me, let me have the devotion to your feet. Because that's all he wants, is love to his feet. So the grace of the Lord is invoked before the text is begun. Okay. And you can, Guruji's commentary is extremely simple. Please read it. If I tell you everything that is only in the commentary, then there is no point. So you read that. I will tell you whatever I understand. And if there are any questions on the commentary, definitely you can ask me. Okay. So now he's going to talk about bhakti. So obviously, because the text is about bhakti, see, if you read a bhakti text, it's like that. Okay, like Narad Bhakti Sutra. Then Naradji will only glorify bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. If you read a knowledge text, So the reason is that neither one is superior, neither one is inferior. It is what you are capable of. So if your heart melts in love, then you pick up bhakti text and you do. But if you have that dry intellect and the logic, like, but why is this like this? And why is that like that? Why is that? Then for those people, it is better to have the knowledge text, you know, but it's nice to study. And those who are balanced, they are in the karma cycle. So karma yogins, but this is bhakti. So here he, verse number two, धर्मार्थ काम मोक्षाहि पुरुषार्थ पुरुषार्थश्च चतुर्विधाः तेभ्य श्रेष्ठतरा भक्तिः मता भागवतोत्तमैः. Verily, there are four human pursuits: dharma, righteous merits, wealth, pleasure, and liberation. However, great devotees consider devotion to be superior to all these pursuits. So we have talked about these four pursuits, but I don't know, there are new people here. Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. I told you, there is no new idea in this book. So these four purusharthas, purushartha, self-effort. Purusha, artha. Artha here means effort. So purushartha, and purusha also includes females. Huh? It's not, purush means not only male, men and women. And purushartha is only for human beings. Please understand that also. Animals do not have any purushartha. They do not have the power to think, the intellect to think that, oh, I should get moksha out of this body. They don't. They live by instinct alone. So these purusharthas that have been given in the Vedas are dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Dharma is righteous living, and artha is wealth. So remaining in the parameters of dharma, righteous, you must earn wealth. Why? Because Shruti recognizes that we have desires. So it's very natural to have. The very fact that we got birth indicates we have got desires. If we had no desires at all in our previous birth, we wouldn't even have gotten this body. So the basic line is, if I got this body, that means I must have some desires. Otherwise, I would not have gotten this body. Okay, so Shruti recognizes that. So Shruti says, you have desires. I have no problem with that. For that, you have to earn money. I have no problem with that either. But you do it within the parameters of dharma. So do it by righteous means. Dharma, artha, gain wealth and then fulfill your desires. Dharma, artha, kama. Kama is desires. Kama means both actually. Desires as well as desired objects. And yes, I recognize, Shruti says, I recognize that you have desires. So you are allowed to earn, we are allowed to earn wealth by righteous means. And then this karma, these desires also should be fulfilled remaining in the parameters of dharma. So we shouldn't do anything which is not right for our ashram. There are four ashrams, right? Brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. So in the grahastha stage, if the brahmachari dharma is to study student life, then you get married and you're doing all these karmas and working, etc., etc., within the parameters of dharma, you fulfill all your desires. And then you, when you do that, remaining within the parameters of dharma, you become qualified for moksha, for liberation. But remember always that liberation is the final goal, the ultimate goal. We, normal human beings, there are four kinds of goals that we all have. One is known as an immediate goal, short-term goal, long-term goal, and then ultimate goal. So the immediate goal for all of us, or even in one family, if there's two children and a husband, wife, then immediate goal is different. They get up in the morning, the children have to go to school. The father has to go to work. Maybe the mother is not working. Maybe she has got work at home, or maybe she has a work. So immediate goals can be different for even in one family, or for us, if we say, our immediate goal, all of us will have a different immediate goal. Somebody might be going out. Somebody might be eating dinner. Somebody has to watch TV after the class. So immediate goal is always different for everybody. Then there is a short-term goal that we have. So for students, yeah, right now my short-term goal is to finish grade 12 and then get into university, graduate. So that becomes a short-term goal. Then there is a long-term goal. So like in a family, there would be a long-term goal of maybe I have to pay off my mortgage, which is a little long-term goal, you know. And we'll have short-term goals depending on, you know, if you're working, then you have a different goal. If you're studying, you have a different short-term goal. Long-term goal will be, somebody will say, my long-term goal is to get a house. My long-term goal is to get married. You know, after I graduate, then I'll get married. Or whatever. So these three goals will be different for different people. But what Shruti says is that the ultimate goal, which is moksha, which is liberation, is common for all of us. There is no exception there. It doesn't matter who, as long as you're a human being, you call yourself a human being, then your ultimate goal has to be liberation. Has to. That is common across the board. Okay. So for that liberation, so the most common example that I like to give is when you start working, when I started working, the first day I got called into the manager's office and said, how much do you want to contribute to your retirement fund? That was the first question that I was asked, right? Okay, you're allowed to contribute so much percentage. And so that is that, not the ultimate, but the long-term goal. Because at some point in time in your life, you are going to retire, whether you want it or not. You have to retire. If you don't retire yourself, they will retire you. And at that time you need money. So you plan from day one, or from day one, you're supposed to plan for retirement. That is what they tell us in when you work, is that retirement is going to come. Same way Shruti tells us this liberation, you need to get it ultimately. So start preparing for it from day one. Just like you started putting little money away from day one, the first salary, so much percentage has to go into retirement fund. Same here, we don't have to put money in, we have to put time in. For that ultimate goal, we need to give some time starting now. And we must not say, oh, I wasted so much time before and I didn't do this before and that before. No need to say that. If you realize it today, start today. Put in time there. Okay. So Shruti, the scriptures tell us that the highest goal, the ultimate goal, is liberation. Now hear what the devotees, they say, no, not liberation. Devotion is the highest goal. Everybody should get devotion. Now, the reason that they say that, a devotee, I think Guruji is also going to explain that one comes, but the other reasons will come. But one reason that I'll tell you is devotion, they say, is in this, see, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, dharma, artha, and kama are the means. And moksha is the result. Right? You, by righteous living, you earn wealth and you have desires. So exhaust your desires, then you will qualify for moksha. Because unless all the desires are exhausted, liberation is not possible. So they become the means. Whereas in devotion, they say, devotion is the means and the goal. Devotion itself is the means and devotion itself is the goal. And therefore they say, the devotees say, it is easier, and that is why they consider this as even greater than liberation, because they do not want liberation. Devotees, and Guruji will say that later, is they do not even ask for liberation. They say, why should I get liberated? I want a body. Why do I want a body? Because only when I'm in a body, I can love you. I can dress you up. I can do puja. I can do this, that, everything I can do. I need a body. So for that, we have Sant Tukaram in Maharashtra. He said to us, said, Bhagwan, don't give me liberation. Give me birth after birth after birth. Just give me birth, birth, birth. But in every birth, make sure that I have devotion to your lotus feet. That I ask you. Birth doesn't bother me. That's okay. That's fine. Give me. A jnani, you know, he will not say birth. No. It's too this thing and all that. So that's why here it is said that these four goals are there, but devotion is the highest. For one who is a devotee, they like all these things. But one who is more, you know, logically, then they're like, oh, what is this? But, you know, we study it anyways. What is the punya rupotra vai dharmaha sakama swarga prapakaha kshayat punyasya tannashaha tasmatne nechanti tambudhaha. So the three goals are being talked about. Here, dharma is in the form of righteous merits earned through desire-prompted meritorious deeds, whose result is heaven. Wise people do not desire it because it perishes at the exhaustion of merit. This is also not a new idea. dharma in our scriptures is the most misunderstood word. Because dharma means religion, dharma means, caste, all kinds of things. Dharayati iti dharma, that is the break of that word. That which upholds is dharma. The actual real meaning of dharma is that which upholds. So the dharma of sugar is to be sweet. And if there is some white substance which is not sweet, you cannot call it a sugar. If there is some substance which is not hot, you can never call it as fire. And if you were to take sweetness out of sugar, or if you were to take heat out of fire, they no longer remain as sugar. They no longer remains as fire. That is what the actual meaning of dharma is, that which upholds. Okay. But then dharma also means righteous living. And here in this thing, dharma means righteous living. So the first purushartha, first self-effort that we should do is to live by the correct means, not to do anything illegal or anything. And when I do good actions give a punya. Punya, merit, gives sukha. Okay? Shruti says that. You do, as you sow, so shall you reap. We know that. If I sow a mango seed, I'm going to get mangoes. If I sow chili seed, I'll get chilies only. I cannot get mango out of a chili seed. So whatever karmas that I have done, they will produce good and bad results. The good results will give sukha. The bad results will give dukkha. And the highest that karma can give, because dharma is righteous action. So the highest that any righteous action can give is swargalok, heavens. That's it. Cannot go any higher than that with righteous action. Problem with heavens is, which we have already known, most of us know, is it's like going to a resort with a credit card of say $5,000 or a saving of $5,000. So you can stay there till your $5,000 are exhausted, and then you have to be back to pavilion, back to home to work, because you have no more money. It's exactly what heaven is. You take a certain balance of punya, you know, $5,000, $10,000, some may have $10,000, some may have $5,000, some may have $15,000, whatever. So you take that balance and you go to Swargaloka. And as per that balance, you know, the funny thing in Swargaloka is, okay, there is one Indra who is the king, right? But then, you know what? There are his bodyguards also. There are people who are janitors who are cleaning Swargaloka. And there are people who are cooking. They're cooks. Because king is there. Who will cook? He doesn't cook. So there are cooks also. So as per our, you know, punya, we get that position. We don't thought everybody is going to become Indra. So we could become a janitor in heaven. We could become a cook. We could become a maid servant. We could be washing floors, but it'll be heaven floors. Floors of heaven, not ordinary house. But we could be doing that. So please remember this point about heaven. I remember, you know, when I was, I had just graduated and I was working in a bank in India. There was this one girl came. She also had graduated. She came to my uncle. My uncle was in a high police department, and he had strings he could pull and give people jobs. So she told my uncle, like, they were right in front of my eyes. She says, it doesn't matter even if I have to wipe the floors, but I want a job in a bank alone. I will wipe the floors, but it has to be a bank. That much you wanted the bank. So this heaven is like that. Depending on how much balance you have, that post you will get. There's a hierarchy in heaven also. Okay? And when that thing finishes, back. So that's why we have to think. We have to think. We have to do good actions. Huh? That doesn't mean if we do bad actions, we forget heaven. We won't even get earth. We'll go down. In the ladder, we'll fall. So good actions we have to do. But then, do I want to just keep heaven as the goal? That's what we have to think. Think. Okay? Now, next. So if I don't want to keep heaven as a goal, but I'm told that, no, I have to do good actions, but not for the heavens, then what should I be doing that for then? Good actions. Why should I do? Next verse. Mana shuddhi karo dharmaha nishkamo yoga sadhakaha artha kama vubhau loke kevalau bhoga dayakau. Dharma practiced without selfish desires purifies the mind and is helpful in yoga. The pursuit of wealth and pleasure give only worldly enjoyment. So now from karma, we move into karma yoga. This idea is also not new. I told you, there will be no idea which is new in this text because it is a Prakaran Granth. And Guruji himself has said in the introduction that, you know, so I have to do righteous action. I have to do, if you look at Bhagavad Gita, Arjun, Bhagavan tells him that, you know, Arjun, you hate Duryodhan. You have hatred in your mind. You have anger in your mind because, you know, your Draupadi was, there was, you know, whatever happened with Draupadi, right? And it's okay. You can fight with all those negative tendencies in your mind. It's okay. Even if you fight with those negative attitudes, you will get heaven because it's your dharma. Kshatriya dharma is there. That is your dharma. You can fight with negative attitudes. You will get heaven. No doubt about it. The doors of heaven will be open for you. This is what Bhagavan said in chapter 2. That the doors of heaven will be open for you. But go for something higher. Same thing. This is the same idea here. Yes, I have to do righteous action. And I can be, you know, be boiling inside. Oh God, I have to go do all this. But yet my action I'm doing. In the mind, there is all impurities. But nevertheless, maybe I'm doing it out of fear also. You know, I might be afraid of going to jail. I might be afraid, you know. So in any case, I can do good actions. If I do good actions, I will get heaven. It's because it is said in the Vedas. That's why this is correct. We have to have faith in the Vedas. So Vedas are saying that you do good action, you will get heaven. Okay, fine. But then from heaven, it's a point of return. And like I said, I also very recently found out the hierarchy. Oh Lord, do I want to be a janitor in heaven or rather go for liberation, you know? So Shruti says, you know, so that's why then what they say is you have to do righteous action. There is no choice but to act for human beings. Please remember this point also. Very, very important point. We do not have a choice. I cannot say that I will just stay without doing any action because I'm breathing. I will have to eat to sustain the body. So man, human being cannot live without action. So if I have to do it, then let me do it with a different attitude in my mind. Not with anger, jealousy. Why should I be doing this? Why should I be doing this? Not with that sort of an attitude, with a positive attitude, with a sense of duty, with a sense of detachment, with a sense, you know, samatva buddhi, equanimity, all surrender with a sense of surrender to a higher altar. When I do actions like that, what it will give me is purification of mind. That is what it will give me. It may or may not give me that. It will give me heavens. But it'll, at the same time, it will also give me purity of mind. And the purity of mind is important because even heavens is only after I die. Right? Heaven is not there in this life. Heaven is only after death. That is another thing about heaven. It's not, there's no heaven in this world. Heaven is a different world. But if I purify my mind enough, maybe knowledge can arise in this life. And in this life only I can get liberated because that is possible. Liberation is possible in this life. Heaven is not possible in this life. So right here and now I can see the results of a purified mind, but of just the actions, I cannot see those actions in this life. I can't. Okay. So that's why what Guruji is saying, Shruti is saying, it purify it helpful in yoga. Here yoga means it coming from the word root word yuj, to join. So yoga means union with God. Here that purified mind will become a means to join with God directly. Forget the heavens in between. Let that be there. So that this is that yoga. Whereas wealth and pleasures there is nothing earning more wealth I earn, I'll get a bigger heaven. No. Heaven is based on punya. It's not based on wealth. All rich people would have gone to heaven only. So those other two, dharma, there is for purification of mind or for heavens. So there are two categories. But wealth and pleasure, only in this life you will enjoy. And then finish. When this life is finished, then that is also over. Okay? Kevalo bhogadayako. They only will give you experiences. Wealth, you can experience a lot of things. Pleasures, you can experience a lot of pleasures. What happens with pleasures then when you indulge too much, then the body can get diseased, decayed, and then there will be no enjoyment. Okay, there will be no vairagya, there will be no dispassion. Then in old age, it becomes very difficult, etc., etc. So, all that. All right. Muktir vaimochanam vidhi jaramarana sansrutehe vilakshanahi bhaktistu shuddha premara satmika. Understand liberation to be released from the cycle of old age and death. However, devotion, which is of the nature of blissful, pure love, is quite unique. Okay, so he says, okay, mukti is there. See, in the first verse, what did they say? That the devotees say devotion is even greater than liberation. Okay, so now liberation is what? Only freedom. If Bhagwan Shankaracharya would hear that, then he would not, I don't know if he would really like it. He is a great one for liberation. But anyway, this is bhakti, you know, devotees talking, right? So Naradji, if he was there, he'll totally agree. He'll say, yes, what is there in liberation? Just no more birth. But devotion, you know, you have that love, you have that rasa. You know, in the heart, your heart melts, and then you're with your beloved God, and you know, all that love. I'm also not too good at bhakti, very honestly speaking, but it is like that. We will stop here. The next topic is coming up, bhakti lakshanam. What are the characteristics of a bhakta? We have studied this in chapter 12 as well. We'll continue. If there are any questions or if anybody wants to ask anything, I'll give you time, because here he only says it is, and that's the reason that yes, Prem Sai.
I think this might be related to this next shloka, but I'm reading the I Love You letters from Swami Chinmayananda.
Yes,
and he mentions that you can have, you know, there's the two types of love. There's prema and sneha, yes. The lower and higher. And yeah. He says some people can even though they love God with a purpose. And
yeah.
That's actually not, how does that work, you know, with
no, being it is like, attachment, yeah. And love. And that's exactly the next asaktir vishaya prema deha dara grahadishu. The next verse, we will explain love and attachment. That is what Gurudev is saying there. See, people love God, they are devotees, but then they are asking for things. That is the difference between attachment and love. Love, when we say, it has to be unconditional. Unconditional means they should not be, I want this, therefore I love you. So attachment has that attached to it. A little bit of, you know, I want this, I want that. That's why it's a bigger explanation. That's why I'm stopping here today, because next verse that is coming up, bhakti lakshanam. And the nature of bhakti, devotion, is unconditional. Like I told you, the devotees, they say, I don't even want liberation. I only want to love you. Unconditional. It's very, very, unconditional love is extremely difficult. Because even when parents love their children, somewhere underlying, there is a hope that the child will look after me when I get old. You know, and it's very difficult. It's very, very subtle. But we still do have that little thing that this child. So with children, it becomes very difficult. With children, we must try not to have that expectation. The only expectation that you should have is from God. Only God can fulfill all expectations. So that's why love God, love the children also. Not, we are not saying don't. So actually what will happen is when you turn all your expectations towards God, all your love for all these other things will become expectation less, and they will not be attachment, they'll be love. That expectation part is to be shifted to God. Oh Lord, you help me. And you know, one thing about this expectation from the Lord is Lord can come in any form and help you. When you put pin your expectations on one person, it may be your child, it may be your friend, it may be your neighbor, relatives, whoever, brother, sister, that person may not be available for you when you need him or her. But you see, God can make sure that somebody will show up and he will help you. That power the other person doesn't have. He may not be there to help you when you need him most. Right?
Is it still bhakti when you have those expectations?
No.
Towards no. the Lord though? It's no. not, right?
Okay. It drops. It is love, but it is not bhakti. Bhakti is of the highest order. That's why devotion becomes very difficult. It's not easy. It's people think it is easy, but it's not. It's not. Any questions? Any other? Yes, Mr. Nair.
As you know, I definitely have three generations now at home. The youngest and the oldest. My mom will not accept anything but chanting Hanuman Chalisa. Even if she chants about 100 times, she won't stop.
Okay.
However, I'm in the middle because I have to keep her kind of in her own path. So because she's so much attached to me, so that's where the question comes to me. Where does the Dharma find an end of life? Should I continue to support her the way she is? Because she's so dependent on me. How do I unclutch myself?
Yeah.
That's where the thing is.
See, the thing is, I'll tell you one thing, that the duty towards our parents never ends until they go. So you have to support her in whatever way. The debt that we have towards our parents, the real debt is this body. See, because the body, the jiva in us is independent. It was there from before, but the body was given to us by our parents. Body has come from the sperm and the egg. Body. And because I have this body, I can even take this class or pursue the spirit, because body is required to even pursue the spiritual journey. I need to do good action. I need body. So that debt remains till the very end. That debt is, we owe it to our parents that they gave us this body. And because of this body, not only I can serve them, but I can serve the world, or I can pursue my dreams, my pleasures, my whatever. So that debt can never be repaid.
I understand. However, there's one more question. Is that, I understand, okay, there is a debt to support her in her way.
Yeah.
The point I want to make is, she won't let me go. For example, to attend this class, she won't let me go. And that's what it is. Sometimes it's very difficult for me to make her understand.
Yeah.
Give me that one and a half hour.
Yeah.
I can't. In a way, I would say that coming to Zoom session, it has helped personally. It has helped me and my wife.
Good. See, the thing is that on her part, it is attachment towards you that she doesn't let you go. But you must not blame her. I'll tell you one thing. The reason that she's not allowing you to go is because it is not in your prarabdha to attend classes. Your destiny is also there. Please don't forget that. You have come with your own destiny. Okay. She has come with her own destiny. You two have, for some reason, now she's not allowing you to attend classes, but now COVID-19 has become good for you because we started Zoom, right? So you can attend all three classes. You're attending Calgary class also, and both in Vancouver. So it's your prarabdha also which is at play. Because that you cannot deny, na? If your prarabdha was to, I will be very honest with you. When I was also beginning in this day, you know, in this path, my father was doing the thing. I would go to India and my mother would not allow me to go to the ashram. My mother would not allow me. My dad would go attend lectures. Swami Tejomanji is giving lecture, this one, that one. My dad used to go and my mom used to say, no, you don't go. We'll go shopping. You don't go. She used to not allow me that time. Then slowly, but for me, fortunately, I was in Vancouver. So when I went to India for 3-4 weeks, I'd say, okay, fine, doesn't matter. I'll stay with you. I won't go with dad. My dad used to tell me every time he'll say, you missed a good lecture. And he can go, but you have little children, so you cannot go. But then here I pursued, and then it was my prarabdha which took over. And then ultimately I went and did the course and she was very supportive. Then she realized that I am on the right path. She realized that. So she's like, now don't leave this path, she told me.
Thank you for one of the biggest clarification that I needed. Thank you.
Okay, good. good. That's why the classes are there. Any other questions? I hope everybody's enjoying it. Is it good? Good? Okay, good. So we'll meet next month. Last week, after we completed chapter 12 discussion, I'm sorry, I didn't ask if you guys needed a break or if you wanted a break. No? You're okay, right? Okay, because today before starting class, I thought, you know what? I didn't even ask them. So I thought I should ask them.
We're here, so.
Oh, yeah, I know. Nobody's traveling. I know.
One thing I would like to say is that if love isn't unconditional, it's not love.
Yes, it is attachment. It is a lower love, attachment. It is attachment, actually, love, very love. Honestly.
It's something totally different.
Yeah. From the highest standpoint, it is attachment. It is we will talk about it. Asakti, it's a big topic. Attachment and love is a big, that's why I didn't go into it. I thought it's better if I give. And before we close, Suman, did I see a cast on your hand?
Yes.
What happened? Sorry, just a few minutes.
Oh, J.I.G., I was walking and fell down on the sidewalk. I was trying not to show it, but I guess.
No, yeah. But no snow, na? There was no snow. Was there snow?
It was uneven and I was looking at somebody's flowers. So it's just a break over here, not my
yeah.
This one.
Yeah. So. Oh, sorry to hear that. I kind of noticed it. I thought, oh my God, you know.
Thank you. No, I'm sorry. I was trying not to show. But
No. Well, what is there? But at least not in the snow or anything. Anyway,
thank you.
Have a good week. And Prince Ayi, I'm glad you're attending.
Yes.
Where's mom today? Where's mom?
Mom is on a week-long silent retreat.
Oh.
So she's not able to use devices, talk, communicate.
Yeah. Vipassana, is she gone for Vipassana meditation?
It's, I'm not sure the specific details. It's part of her, she's doing a mindfulness course.
Right.
Through the university. So yes. That was part of one of the requirements.
Okay.
Is to do. But it was supposed to be away, but because of COVID, she's doing it at home, but she's not allowed to use any devices or anything like that.
Understood.
So she, yeah. But she'll be back next week for sure.
No worries. Okay, so we shall close now and we will meet next Monday. Om Swasti Prajabhyav Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmanebhya Shubhamasu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parjanyaha Prithvi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamkshobharaitaha Brahmana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarvesham Swasti Bhavatu Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu Sarvesham Purnam Bhavatu Sarvesham Mangalam Bhavatu Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Nira सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत् ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Harihi Om everybody. We'll see you next time.